From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, with the battle in Washington, D.C. over gun control, the Democrats in the state Senate try to force a vote on gun control legislation in New York. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, explains why New York's public sector unions are furious over a Supreme Court case that began this week, and the Preservation League wants changes to historic tax credits. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The battle over gun control in Washington, D.C. Democrats in the state Senate in New York this week tried to force a vote on gun control legislation in the state Senate. That was to put Republicans on the spot over some GOP senators' resistance to the bills. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says the bills include banning possession of bump stocks, the ammunition booster used in the Las Vegas shootings, and allowing a judge to limit a person's access to guns if they are deemed likely to harm themselves or others, known as the Extreme Risk Protection Order.
The bills Mike Conference will be advancing today on the floor are not radical, they're not extreme, they're common sense ways to reduce gun violence.
The other measures include allowing New York State scientists to conduct research on the effects of guns and gun violence. It is banned on the federal level, and expanding the 3-day waiting period for buying a gun to 10 days. On the Senate floor, Democratic Senator Brad Hoylman, who sponsors the bump stock ban, says the state can't wait for federal action.
Congress says they'll close the bump stock loophole, but it's been 4 months, and they've been gutless in the face of the National Rifle Association. It's up to us in New York. We should spit in the face of the NRA today and ban bump stocks once and for all through this amendment.
No Republican senator spoke on the floor, and a vote was called.
A show of hands has been requested. All those in favor of overruling the chair, please signify or please raise your hand.
29 Democrats and members of the Independent Democratic Conference stood up and raised their hands. 30 GOP senators sat silently, and the amendment was rejected.
Announce the results.
Ayes 29.
The ruling of the chair stands.
Two senators were absent. Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan did not speak publicly, but he did issue a statement saying the GOP is hard at work on a comprehensive school safety plan. He says it will include strengthening school security and could be ready by as early as March 5th. Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco confirmed the discussions.
There's an appetite. In fact, we're going over various bills that are out there to try to provide safety in the schools. As far as gun control, you know, it depends what you're talking about. If you want to make it, if you want to try to eliminate people who have documented and provable mental illnesses that shouldn't have the guns, well, obviously, that should be something we should look at very seriously.
But he says there needs to be a balance to ensure that everyone has a right to due process. New York already has some of the most restrictive gun laws in the nation, known as the SAFE Act. It was passed after the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting 5 years ago. It limits the purchase of assault weapons and related ammunition, among other measures. Governor Cuomo has been on national media recently touting the successes of the SAFE Act, which he championed. He's also agreed to pool data on gun purchases with other neighboring states to help in background checks. In a conference call, Cuomo did not wholeheartedly endorse the bills by the Senate Democrats.
If we can make additional protections for our state law, yes. But is that the ultimate answer? No. Because we have borders, and that's why you need federal action. or a coalition of states, second best to federal action.
Senator Stuart Cousins says she believes the governor is equally interested in protecting the lives of New Yorkers, but she says the measures introduced on the Senate floor are really about the legislature taking action in its first days back after the Parkland, Florida school shooting.
To continue to do nothing, day after day, week after week, year after year, in the face of things that we really all know are terrible tragedies that we can do something about, I think is just, it's really unacceptable.
In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, the issue of public sector labor unions and the fees they charge for people who don't want those fees used for political action. The Supreme Court case, the so-called Janus case, comes out of Illinois. And you spoke with the head of the New York AFL-CIO, as well as the head of the New York State United Teachers Union this week, who are not happy about this.
Nor should they be. This court is going to come down 5-4. It's going to be up to Gorsuch himself, the new appointee. There are people who say, well, it all rests on Gorsuch because we don't really know which way he's going to go. Yeah, we know which way he's going to go. He's going to go with Trump, the man who put him there. It's going to be a 5-4 decision, and it's going to mean that unions, which have so-called agency shops, in other words, you work in New York State, you're going to be represented by that union, all the benefits they get you are there, and they're going to take a small amount out of your salary to support the union. And this is, of course, objected by Janus, who says this is a matter of freedom of speech. I don't want them representing me, and I don't want them talking for me. Look, the American people don't like what happened to unions. It may not be fair, but they don't. The labor leaders I've been talking to say in the land of Trump, things have gotten better. More people are joining unions again. We'll see. But in any case, this decision is almost a sure thing. They are going to say, if you don't want to pay them, you don't have to pay them in order to be in the union. And a lot of Americans will agree with that. On paper, that's a position that makes a certain amount of sense. But in fact, in the way it works right now, this is all being sponsored by the right wing in America. They are putting up the money for this law case. They want to make sure that the unions are destroyed. And that's what's going on here.
As the trial continues in Manhattan of New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's former top aide, Joe Percoco, Alan, interesting article in the Buffalo News by Tom Precious, which points out that even though the governor has been tight-lipped, when he went on MSNBC to talk about gun control and the SAFE Act, inevitably the question comes from the host about the trial and the article focusing on the damage that can do.
Well, that's right. His position all along has been, hey, I have nothing really to do with this. We've seen that most of the time Andrew Cuomo was in New York City as opposed to Albany to do his work. All of a sudden, he's pretty far away from New York City a good deal of the time. Look, this is very damaging to Cuomo. Whether these guys are found guilty, and I have my doubts whether they will be, but even so, the fact that he chose his top people and that they played games, allegedly, becomes a huge part of his legacy. And now the New York Times comes out in an article this morning saying despite the fact that Cuomo has always been a model of announced rectitude when it comes to ethics, it turns out that despite the fact that, according to the Times, you're not supposed to be asking for money for the people you've appointed, the boards and commissions and things, he has hugely. And that, of course, becomes a lead article in the Times and very tough on Cuomo.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. For the second time in less than a week, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was in the Hudson Valley to make announcements. The Democrat was at the State University of New York at New Paltz this week to kick off the first of four summits on harmful algae blooms. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
5 days after he was at Marist College to discuss his budget and announce a few economic development projects in the Hudson Valley, Governor Cuomo introduced the first of four regional summits supporting the state's effort to protect lakes and water bodies in upstate New York from harmful algal blooms, or HABs. The Hudson Valley Summit is part of the $65 million four-point initiative unveiled in the governor's 2018 State of the State to combat HABs.
To me, HABs are God's way of saying, pay attention. I mean, really pay attention. And pay attention now.
The summits bring together national and state experts, including scientists and local stakeholders. Cuomo says that in 2 years' time, HABs went from a sporadic to a major consequential issue.
These are poisons and toxins. They're growing at a frightening rate. 2015, there were 35 cases in the state of New York, the entire state. 2016, we found HABs in drinking water, in drinking water supply, which now takes it to a new level. 2017, 100 beaches closed because of HABs.
The Hudson Valley Summit focuses on four of the 12 priority water bodies that Cuomo says were chosen as the state's most problematic. Three of the four are in Putnam County and are part of the New York City watershed. Putnam Lake in the town of Paterson has shown elevated nutrient levels typical of other New York lakes with frequent HABs. The lake has suffered more than 30 weeks of documented HAB outbreaks since 2012. Lake Carmel in the town of Kent has shown elevated algal levels typical of other lakes in the lower Hudson with high phosphorus and nitrogen levels, and suffered 18 weeks of HAB outbreaks, resulting in more than 30 days of beach closures in 2017. And Palmer Lake in Kent and Carmel has shown elevated nutrient and algae levels, suffering its first HAB outbreak in 2017. The fourth is the Monhegan Reservoir, which serves as the drinking water supply for the city of Middletown in Orange County. Cuomo says these outbreaks and closures devastate tourism, a large part of New York's economy.
Worse than that, many of these lakes are sources of drinking water. And once you have a polluted or dangerous source of drinking water, you have a real problem. I am living with it now all across the state.
When Cuomo first announced the initiative in January, a few environmental groups in the Hudson Valley were disappointed that the Wallkill River was not on the list. The Wallkill flows through Orange and Ulster counties and is a major Hudson River tributary. It has had its share of HABs, including a severe one in 2016, that produced toxins and covered as much as 30 miles of the river with bright green algae for 60 days. So when Cuomo announced the effort to develop an action plan for 12 water bodies, the Wallkill River Watershed Alliance and Riverkeeper called on the state to add the Wallkill to the list.
And we think it's a great initiative overall, but we know that the Wallkill's problems have really been severe, and that it could really benefit from this kind of look.
Dan Shapley, Water Quality Program Director for Riverkeeper, speaking at the end of January. Shapley says if the Wallkill is not labeled a priority, it should at least get priority attention. The public portion of today's summit on harmful algal blooms begins this hour and runs until 8.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
2 weeks ago, Adirondack interests raised concerns about an item in Governor Andrew Cuomo's budget that would shift how New York pays property taxes to local communities on lands it owns in the Adirondacks. Now, a forever taxable coalition has been formed to oppose a payment in lieu of taxes system in the Adirondacks and Catskills. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The Adirondack Park is a mix of public and private lands. The state pays property taxes to towns on state-owned land, the same property tax as any private landowner. The state tax department has proposed freezing and then capping the taxes that the state pays in the current budget proposal. Municipalities and conservation groups had asked the governor to remove the proposed cap and pilot, or payment in lieu of taxes, system from the executive budget. That did not happen. Now the citizen advisory panels for the Adirondack and Catskill parks, conservation groups, and local governments have formed the Forever Taxable Coalition to oppose the plan. Adirondack Wild Friends of the Forest Preserve managing partner David Gibson says the taxable status of the 3 million acres of Forest Preserve is critical for the 102 governments and school districts in the Adirondacks and Catskills.
Because it's such a relatively small item, dollar-wise, we could get buried and ignored, and that's our job as a coalition, make sure that forever wild lands are forever taxable. These are state commitments, and the state has to honor them. Otherwise, it becomes much more difficult for the state to count on the towns to support land protection. That's the real threat here, is that future land protection proposals by the state of New York will not get the support at the local level that they deserve.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Chairman and Town of Saranac Councilman Gerald Delaney notes that in some towns, the vast majority of property is owned by the state. So if the state caps what it pays, private landowners would have to pick up the tax burden. He says that would not be viable in towns where the majority of land is state-owned.
That's a huge impact on those towns and counties. The little town of Arietta, I believe, is one of the towns at 92%. So the state would cap 92% of the land at 2% growth, and that tax burden would then shift to the private landowners.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says the proposed tax revision reinforces a fear that the state is trying to remove financial support for the forest preserve.
We think the communities are really an integrated part of the landscape and overall have not encroached into the backcountry. There is a state interest in making sure that that balance continues and that New York State, the best way that they can help is by paying its share of taxes on the forest preserve. If those communities lose the support, then we can't really count on those communities to support the forest preserve. It would not only put the communities in a position where they might actually try to stop future purchases, but also ask for more intensive recreation on existing lands to get more financial benefit out of it if they feel that they're not being fairly compensated by the state.
Coalition members believe the proposed change in the tax payment system would be illegal. Again, Gerald Delaney.
The real property tax law, which actually says the state will pay taxes on state forest preserve as if it was privately owned. We feel that law would have to be repealed before they could actually institute a pilot.
New York State Real Property Tax Law, Section 542, mandates that forest preserve land must be valued as if privately owned, and in Section 532A is taxable for all purposes.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. The Preservation League of New York State is asking legislators to support changes to historic tax credits. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
The Preservation League brought advocates, business leaders, and government officials together at the Capitol Tuesday to talk about the New York State Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program. Preservation League of New York State President J. D. Lorenzo says the program has had an impact from Buffalo to Long Island and is threatened by recent changes in federal tax policy and the anticipated sunset of the program at the end of 2019.
What those two things have done is they've injected uncertainty into the development process and threatened projects that are already in the pipeline.
DiLorenzo says those projects worth a total of $6 billion depend on rehabilitation credits, and without them would have difficulty moving forward.
We have Senate Bill 7648 and Assembly Bill 9882 that do just what needs to be done, and that's they extend this New York State Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program for 5 years, and they decouple it from the federal program.
Advocates say extension in the 2018 budget will ensure that projects continue to move forward with investor and developer confidence that the program will remain in place. Bill's sponsor, Assemblywoman Carrie Warner, a Democrat from Round Lake, represents Saratoga and Washington counties. She dubs Saratoga Springs the city that Preservation built.
There are so many projects in Saratoga Springs that would not have happened if there were not both federal and state tax credits. You may have stopped in to see the rehabilitation of the Adelphi. This was a $30 million rehab project that saved the last great hotel in Saratoga Springs. And that project would not have happened but for the state tax credits.
Albany area Assembly Democrats Pat Fahey and John McDonald echoed Werner's remarks.
Right down the street from here, we have the Renaissance Hotel, which had been known as the DeWitt Clinton Hotel for many, many years, and an extraordinary renovation that was done there just a couple of years ago.
But when I think about just my district alone, Waterville to Tilly Lofts, and Troy the Redbird Building, yes, the Harmony Mills Lofts, here in Albany, the Warehouse District, easily you can count 1.5 million square feet of basically forgotten properties that have been reclaimed and rebirthed.
According to the League, historic tax credit projects, both federal and state, in 2016 generated $45.6 million in New York state taxes, along with $53.9 million in local taxes and $142.9 million in federal taxes, more than any other state in the country. Democratic Onondaga County Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli says the credits have helped leverage more than $3 billion in statewide commercial investments.
And since 2016, projects funded with historic preservation tax credits have created 13,000 jobs. This is real economic impact.
McDonald says lawmakers are hard at work in a bipartisan effort to save the tax credits.
This, by far, is one of the most important economic development tools that benefits the taxpayers.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Or ask for program number 1809. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.